Events in Canberra. I'm Hayley Channer, Senior Policy Fellow with the Perth US Asia Centre. Today I'm interviewing my friend, Dr. Tristan Moss. Tristan's Canberra connection is that he did his PhD at ANU and he's also moving to Canberra, but right now he's a senior lecturer in the Griffith Asia Institute in Queensland. Tristan's a historian researching Australian space history and the history of the Australian Defence Force with a focus on culture and policy. His current research focuses on a history of Australian space activities, and he's also working on a very interesting project, I think, a history of sex in the Australian military. Tristan, thank you so much for joining me.
Pleasure to be here.
So I'm really interested in delving down into your knowledge of space and the Australian industry around space. There's a relatively new Australian space agency started up in 2018. How's that space agency been going, and yeah, how do you judge it?
Well, the space agency is going quite well. I mean, it very much fills a gap. When it was created, it filled a gap in the Australian sort of space policy space, for want of a better term, because prior to its existence, Australian space policy had been really fragmented. It'd been the responsibility of lots of different departments. It still is to a certain degree. But there was no sort of central agency that looked after space, no front of house. To really give a really good example of why this was a problem, or one of the reasons this was a problem, in, you know, 20 years ago, when someone once told me a story about how a foreign government agency wanted to contact Australia to talk about space things, and, you know, they went to Google or the phone book and tried to find who was the front of house for space, and the only thing they could find was an education centre in Victoria called the Space Education Centre, and so this poor education centre would always get these emails from, you know, someone in Croatia or something saying, well, I'm writing to the Space Agency of Australia, you guys are the only ones I can find.
I suppose too, because Australia is such a huge continent geographically, and we've got so much sky above us that countries around the world would assume we've got a space centre.
Well, and we've been involved in space for quite some time, helping, you know, America put someone on the moon, working with the European Space Agency in the 1960s and 70s, launched their rocket. Of course, there's a really important space facility outside of Canberra at Timbinbilla, which is really every picture you've ever seen of Pluto or Jupiter has come through Timbinbilla. And so that example, I think, speaks to the way in which Australian space policy was a bit rudderless. There had been lots of attempts of governments to develop a space policy from, you know, this one in the mid-80s, and then the Australian Space Office in the early 2000s, but these weren't really backed by government. And the result was that a lot of departments would be interested in space from a capability perspective. They'd want, say, access to GPS, they'd procure that capability, and then that'd be it, right? But there was no overarching policy. And so the ASA very much steps into that niche as a coordinator of Australian space policy and as a facilitator of bringing all these different government sort of entities together when it comes to space. And I think they've actually done that quite well. I think even they were surprised by the public reaction to their existence. They've had quite a front-facing...
Everyone loves space, don't
Everyone
they?
Loves space. And look, I think it's an easy headline as well. And I think we should be really careful that we don't mistake everyone's sort of passing interest in space with an Australian public interest in spending lots of money on space. because that's an important part of the space conversation. It costs money. But nonetheless, I think they've been really well received, and that's really good. But also from a government perspective, I think they've been energetic when it comes to bringing people together and developing space policy. I will say, though, there are some caveats to this. They are not a statutory agency. They sit under the Department of Industry, and so they could be done away with at any moment if the government so chooses, unlike other statutory agencies. But I think they're very much, my view is, I'm not sure if this is true, but they've very much tried to cement their place in the Australian landscape by signing a lot of MOUs with other space agencies.
So it'll be harder to get rid of.
It's harder to get rid of, yeah. All institutions, their entire goal is to make sure they continue. And they've done a very good job of this. And they've you know, had some clashes with some of the Artemis Accords, with much closer involved with NASA, those sorts of things. And so I think they've done quite well. But I think, and this is a much larger topic of conversation, there is still a need for a realistic whole-of-government space policy, whereas at the moment all we have is an industry space policy.
Mm. That's a very good summary. And I think, too, what you're saying is basically in the last 4 years, even though we've had COVID as well, scorecard for the Australian Space Agency is fairly positive then. And you also did mention how other countries were reaching out to Australia to engage with us on the issue of space. There are other countries in the Indo-Pacific region that have their own space agencies. Do you think, looking at space, as I know you do quite in depth, that it's helping Australia's relations with other countries in the region?
I mean, my answer to that is that I think we tend to see space as monolithic. And so the answer changes according to which part of space we're talking about. So there's defence space, there's industry space, there's commercial, there's data, there's the space that you and I use when we use GPS, there's weather, there's all these sorts of things. And even within those, there's sort of two sides of the same coin. So you look at defence, right? Defence is, you know, a very sovereign thing. Australia's very interested in its own defence, you know, from other entities. And so there's not much necessarily room for cooperation. But then again, the other side of that coin is, like any other defence capability, there's opportunities for working with partners in the same way that we might train with the Singaporeans, for instance, or the United States, or Papua New Guinea. So there's two sides of that coin. Again, industry, I think that, well, Australia very much wants a slice of a pie, and the pie is finite. So we're in competition with other countries in the region, particularly as Australia is, you know, often at a similar level to other countries. So South Korea, for instance, has quite a solid space program and space industry. So we're in competition with countries like that. But equally, because Australia, South Korea, Indonesia, Thailand are never going to be able to compete with the United States, there is opportunities to work together on an industry level, you know, cooperatively, to be greater than the sum of some of the parts. So there's opportunities there and also competition. Another way that Australia very much can work with the region, particularly, say, the Pacific part of this equation, is to be a provider of space services. It's not hard to imagine a country like Papua New Guinea or Tonga or Solomon Islands wanting a space capability, and not just a commercial off-the-shelf one, but a bespoke one, or maybe a defence one, that Australia can provide. And that fits in with broader diplomatic and military relations as well. So it's an added sort of avenue of cooperation as well, particularly in countries where Australia might be a bit further ahead when it comes to space.
I'd never actually thought of all of the different aspects of space as you laid them out in terms of data and GPS and defence. I mean, I knew there were lots of parts to it, but actually not really that many. And yeah, you've really highlighted how we can actually work with other countries too. Thinking about Australia's relationship with the United States, you've just come back from the US where you were looking into this topic of space cooperation. How is the Australia-US relationship on space? Are we using it mainly for defensive reasons, or is there an equal parts we're also looking to help with things like Artemis, which you mentioned before, which is the mission to Mars?
It's both. And I think this is where that question is really, really where history plays an important role in the discussion. So Australia's been involved in space since the day dot, and really involved in space with the United States since the day dot. So in the 1950s, America wants to launch its first satellite. You know, the Russians were first with Sputnik. And it immediately comes to Australia to host tracking stations. There are three reasons Australia is useful to the United States in the 1950s and today. And the line is said by the last NASA representative in Australia, that we are there, bear and fair. So there, in a sense, we face...
I just was like, like physically here, there's nothing to us.
Yeah.
And what was the last one?
Fair.
Okay.
So we're there, we face south. The Americans don't, so we cover an important part of the sky. We're bare in the sense that there's not much here, and there's not much electromagnetic interference, or if you're doing something defense-related, the Russians can't sail a ship by and listen to what you're doing. And we're fair in the sense we're a political system that is closely aligned with the United States. And that's
how you tell it feels like such a slap in the face to have those three things, but actually there are good attributes.
Yeah. But I mean, a lot of what Australia has to offer in space, and the reason The Dish is such a good movie, and the reason we've done stuff to support the Americans is really because we face south. We're useful, and if they could put it somewhere else, they would. But there's not much choice, right? It's South Africa, New Zealand, somewhere in South America. And so we've always been useful to the United States for those reasons. And so we're involved in putting someone on the moon. We're involved in a whole bunch of other sort of space science projects, but also involved in defense projects, Pine Gap being the most famous or infamous example. But I think what's important to note here is the the blurred lines between civilian and military engagement when it comes to the United States. So while putting a person on the moon was very much a civilian endeavor, and NASA was deliberately set up to be separate from the military, for Australia in the 1960s, when we're discussing this, the attitude of the Australian government, and this is all in cabinet files, you can find the archives, is we don't really care what the Americans want to do here, give them whatever they want, because we're interested in growing American interests in Australia, and in doing so growing our security. It's alliance management. So it's very much seen in terms of national security, not space. And so Australia sees both the civilian and the military engagement with the United States in terms of its own national security. And so this is often missed when we talk about how we do space in Australia, that sort of national security piece to civilian activities. But we're still working very closely with the United States. They're our closest partner militarily. They're a really close partner when it comes to civilian research, then as now.
Just sort of taking that point a bit further in terms of defence and security in Australia, working with the United States, you know, back during the Cold War period, there was a space race between the United States and the Soviet Union. And some people now say that we've entered a new Cold War, and this time it's between the United States and China, and there's this new kind of space race. Is it the case that we are fighting for influence and, you know, different capabilities in space? And how could the US and China use space to gain a military advantage?
Yeah, I mean, historians are always wary of historical analogies. Everyone always talks about 1914 or 1941 and the Cold War. And I think there are similarities there on the face of it, but equally the nature of that competition when it comes to space between the United States and China is a little bit different. I don't pretend to be an expert on the Chinese space program, military or civilian, and there's a language barrier there and there's a big secret.
You don't speak Chinese?
No, I don't.
Tristan, what have you been doing in your spare time?
Yeah, I should. I mean, look, all academics should speak another language. I'm just, you know, a typical Australian, I don't. But my sense of the Chinese space program is that it's very different from the Russian one in the 1960s. It's much more gradual and much more sustainable in the sense that they're not... you know, rushing pell-mell to put someone on the moon before the Americans. They're doing this in a very measured way. So they put someone into space, you know, what, 15 years ago or so, my dates are a bit off, and they've developed a space station and they've landed something on the moon. They're doing something, they're really laying a really solid foundation, which is worrying in and of itself, right, because they'll be in a better position than Russia is. I mean, that's not hard. But, and of course, there's a level of competition there. I mean, the sort of the cliche of talking about spaces is competitive, contested, and congested. And China, as a growing space power, will always be on America's radar, as anyone else would be, because America has, up until this point, been the main player in space. But that's not too different from other domains. You know, China is contesting the sort of East Asian region when it comes to naval power. Its air force is growing, as far as I understand it. So space is just another facet of that sort of broader competition. In terms of how they could compete, I mean, it's a little bit different than in other domains because everything in space is dual use. If you throw something hard enough, it's a weapon. And everything goes really quick.
Just thinking of all the small things I could throw.
Yeah, but a fleck of paint in space has caused damage to the space shuttle and the space station. Mm. I mean, if it goes 23,000 kilometers an hour, it hurts when it hits something. And of course, sensors are really important in space. And they, you know, if you're looking at the weather or looking at, you know, bases at Area 51, you know, you can use the same equipment. So it's a little bit different there because it's hard to sort of separate those two things. But you know, ASAT's anti-satellite capabilities are one of the main concerns, not just because you know, America might lose some of its satellites, but also because of the environmental damage that will cause for everybody in using space and sort of...
Because of the congested aspect of it?
Okay. And there's a runaway effect. If you blow up one satellite, those pieces sort of pollute that particular orbit, but then they might hit other satellites and create this sort of runaway effect of debris, and that makes it hard to use space as a whole. And then there's this idea of space being a global commons that we should all protect. And that's certainly a focus of a lot of people who are working on conflict in space, because that's one of the dangerous for everybody.
Tristan, I could honestly talk to you all day about space, especially considering the amount that you know of the history and then also what's happening today to be able to relate it to geopolitics and geostrategic issues. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me about space.
My pleasure.